Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is David Schlesinger and I represent the appellant Gerald Bruce Johnson. In his First Amendment habeas petition filed in the District Court per se, Mr. Johnson alleged that his state-appointed public defender, Tracy McCook, on three separate occasions promised him, and the three separate occasions were on the day of his plea hearing, just before, during the plea hearing itself, and at his sentencing hearing, that Johnson, if he were to plead guilty, would receive no fewer than 4 years in prison.
Counsel, tell me if I've got this right. His claim is ineffective assistance because his lawyer told him he'd get 4 and he actually got 10. But it looked to me like the judge told him he was liable to get up to 10. And it's 2254, so we have to defer under the 2254 standards to the California Court of Appeal, which and I don't see that they made an unreasonable determination of the facts in view of those facts of what I just mentioned.
Let me make a couple.
What am I missing?
What I think you're missing, Your Honor, is that Blackledge, Supreme Court's opinion, Blackledge v. Allison, creates an entirely separate issue regarding whether the district court had erred in not giving him an evidentiary hearing based on the allegations set forth in
the. But you have to have something that requires resolving. And what required resolving? I mean, there's no declaration from counsel. There's a crystal clear record at the plea colloquy. There's no cooperation for the unsworn declarations. So what would happen at an evidentiary hearing? What would it be for?
The evidentiary hearing, Your Honor, would be for the purpose of resolving the different accounts. Presumably, we don't know what Ms. McCook's account would be.
Well, that's just the point. You and I could go to the moon this afternoon, too. I mean, it's possible. But you have to make these decisions based upon a record. And the record here is pretty much, I think, as I just described it.
Well, Your Honor, I would think that Blackledge requires much more of a district court. In Blackledge itself, you had basically the petitioner's allegations set forth in his habeas petition as apparently contradicted by the record in that case. Here you have essentially the same situation. You do have a trial court, a sentencing court record, but you also have Mr. Johnson's, at this point, completely uncontroverted allegations about what Ms. McCook told.
You have a couple of sentences that are in the petition, but you don't have any corroboration for his statements in his memo of points and authorities in state court that were unsworn, and you have no corroboration. So what would have happened if we had an evidentiary hearing today, right here, right now? What would happen?
What would happen is you would have, presumably there would be discovery that would take place before that hearing that would try to inquire into the circumstances that led, as Mr. Johnson alleged, Ms. McCook to make these explicit promises to him. I should also note, Your Honor, that Mr. Johnson in his state.
Where's the evidence of the promises? The state superior court says the record does not substantiate the claim that he had a plea bargain for 4. And it says no promises were made that this would be the sentence. Where's the evidence of the promises?
The evidence of promises at this point, Your Honor, is just in Mr. Johnson's allegations. And I should note that also in the record.
Well, that's not cognizable evidence because it's not sworn.
Well, it is sworn under penalty of perjury in the state habeas proceedings.
Oh, it is? I missed it. Show me.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I missed where it was sworn. Just show me in here.
Let me see if I can very quickly turn to the portion of the state proceedings in which you can see that it's sworn under penalty of perjury. I'll give you an example.
You'll tell us which pages we're talking about, too. He filed 4 of them.
He did file multiple ones. They all had basically generic forms. showing that they were under.
Mind you.
One example would be ER 247, Your Honor. Thank you for indulging me. On the bottom of the page, it says that it is sworn under penalty of perjury.
That's the form, yes?
What's that?
That's the form. I don't happen to have a copy of that one in front of me, but that's the form.
That is the form, Your Honor.
Okay. But the form just has the essentially bare-bone allegation.
He annexed to the form, Your Honor, a handwritten memorandum.
So you're saying annexing the handwritten memo brings it also within the penalty of perjury?
I would think so. We are dealing with an unsophisticated individual here who is not really trained in the niceties of legal pleading. And so I think given that Blacklidge and many opinions from this Court talk about how pro se allegations need to be construed liberally, that was a properly, I guess you could say, notarized statement. I should note also, Your Honor, that there are many instances in the record, including in the First Amendment habeas petition, various habeas petitions filed before the California courts, where Mr. Johnson submits a copy of a letter that he submitted to Ms. McCuga. I believe it was written sometime in late 2001, in which he sought to get some kind of affidavit or declaration from Ms. McCuga regarding his version of the events. I don't believe that Ms. McCuga ever responded to it. At least
sure, but that cuts the other way, if anything.
His first habeas only talked about didn't talk anything saying he got this. You said his first habeas petition.
I'm sorry, his first amended habeas petition before the district court. He didn't.
I'm thinking about the. This is a 2254, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
What did he put in front of the California courts is a question. His first habeas in the California court didn't say anything about it at all. Nor did his second habeas in the California court.
I believe it was his third, to the extent that you're talking about the post-sentencing proceedings in the California court, the first time he made these allegations other than on direct appeal was in his third petition to the Superior Court. The fourth petition to the Superior Court. Then he also made the allegations to the California Court of Appeal and to the California Supreme Court. And I should note that the state has not contested that Mr. Johnson has failed to exhaust this claim. So he has properly raised this claim for the purposes of the 2254 proceeding.
Is the district court right in its quotation of the transcript of his change of plea hearing that the judge made it clear? I think that when he changed his plea, the judge said one possibility was 3 years, 8 months at halftime, but don't get your hopes up. And then he told him his max was 53 years and ascertained that he had no deal. Why isn't that the end of it?
It isn't in the end of it, Your Honor, because later in that same hearing, Ms. Mukuba said to Mr. Johnson, according to Mr. Johnson's allegations, that that meant nothing and that the halftime deal is still yours. I don't know if that's the verbatim quotation. I can get you the exact.
Any indication of when that alleged conversation allegedly took place?
I think if you construe Mr. Johnson's pleadings broadly, as you're required to, that conversation took place during the actual colloquy.
There's just nothing that says that. How are we supposed to know that? I mean, even if we indulge the assumption this stuff was under oath, there's no statement there that as to when that conversation occurred. It could have occurred long after the colloquy. Just as logical.
Again, Your Honor, I think that to the extent that we're engaging in those kinds of that kind of extreme parsing of the record, I think that under Blacklidge, under decisions from this court, that is an issue that a finer of fact, in this case, the district court would have to make. I understand that, and I should note just before I wrap up and reserve time for rebuttal, I should note that Blacklidge itself said that these allegations, as long as they're not patently false, frivolous, palpably incredible, should be enough to require an evidentiary hearing to be held. And I'll reserve my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Viena.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Kevin Viena. I'm the Deputy Attorney General with the California Department of Justice, appearing for Respondent Appellee in this matter. The Court asked perhaps the critical question, what would happen if this case were remanded?